When I met with folks years ago to talk about money in an effort to raise more money to build this beautiful new sanctuary, I found that talking about money led to some really interesting and deep conversations. Some of you, no doubt, took part in some of those conversations, either with me or another invested member of the fellowship. I hope that experience was also positive for you. It taught me that talking about money can be a loving, compassionate experience. Reverend Christina has been known to say that those things we are told not to talk about in polite company, sex, politics, religion, money, we talk about all of them here in church. Many see it as a spiritual path not to back away from the uncomfortable. Leaning in to those things that make us uncomfortable allows for opportunities to learn and grow. We may be frustrated that money is needed for everything. We may not like it when someone talks to us about money, especially when they want you to part with some of yours. The reality is that money is needed for pretty much everything. Our fellowship is no exception. We love coming here to be challenged and fed intellectually and spiritually. Our friends, our beloved chosen family, sit in these chairs and online. We come here to fill up our cup so we can empty it throughout the week. At some point, we must realize we also need to fill our fellowship's cup. I mean, when someone I don't know asks me for money, I'm simultaneously annoyed and impressed. Annoyed because they want my money. Impressed by their ability, their gall to ask for it. But here at the fellowship, we're not talking about a stranger asking me for money. This is my beloved community. I want us to be successful. I also know that is only going to happen if we all come together and give. As uncomfortable as it might be to say that. I love this fellowship. One of the reasons I have us in my will, and I'm part of the Acorn Society. I would love to be able to give even more to our fellowship every month. And we all recognize that we each have a different budget than our neighbor. What my budget allows me to give is not the same as each of you. Some of you will be able to give much more than I am, and others will give less. There is nothing to feel bad about here. We each give to our ability, and we give out of love for this place and all it is for us. That is all tremendously lovely stuff. Nothing uggy about it at all. Today we're going to talk about ways to do that and what it all means. And we hope it is in a fun way. Welcome to the kickoff of game show season. Using the model of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, but instead we're going to play Who Wants to Stump the Minister. Instead of watching someone win millions, because, well, we don't yet have an extra million lying around to give away, today we're going to pose increasingly more difficult questions to an unsuspecting minister in our congregation. The game has four tiers that get increasingly more difficult as we move on in our game. You were asked to submit questions when you came in. Here's a reminder of the four categories. The first category is stewardship. Second, budget. Third, theology of money. And finally, personal connection to money. I will pose your questions to the contestant. The questions should get harder as we move up the four tiers. If possible, I will ask even more questions at the higher tiers, which are theology of money and personal connection to money. If your question does not get answered today, look for a scroll article featuring answers to those questions. With that, let's go to the game. Who wants to stump the minister? Oh, but first, time for a break. Good morning, and welcome to Who Wants to Stump the Minister? We're so glad you're here. Let's meet our contestant, hailing all the way from Appleton, Wisconsin, Reverend Christina Leone Tracy. How are you feeling about this, Christina?
Pretty good. I think, I've been studying and practicing and thinking about these themes a lot, so I hope I'm up to the task, Cindy.
Well, here's how it'll go. We'll have four categories, and you will answer questions submitted by our congregation here. If you're stumped, you have the option to poll the audience or phone a friend. You can only use those lifelines once. Now, before we begin, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, you already mentioned that I live in Appleton, Wisconsin. I grew up in Texas, so the winter is still hard for me, but I'm getting the hang of it. I'm married, and we have two beautiful children and two dogs. I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister, and I think one of the most important things that I can do in my ministry is to help people heal from shame, trauma, and discomfort around money, because it's such a huge part of our world, whether we like it or not, and it connects in so many ways to our personal values.
All right. Well, thanks for that intro, Christina. Let's get started with our first question. How do I give money to the fellowship?
Okay, well, this is a great question. Today we're kicking off our pledge season. So what we're asking for right now is pledges, which is a promise or a guess of how much you will be able to give in the next 12 months. So you don't actually have to give anything today, but when it's time to pay your pledge, you can do it in lots of different ways. Some people pay by check. Some people pay every single week. Some people pay by cash. If you pay by cash, be sure that your name is attached to it somehow. Like you put it in an envelope with your name on it so that we know that it was your money. Otherwise, we don't have any idea who gave that cash. Some people pay online through our online giving platform. Some people pay through stock transfer or retirement account transfers. You can talk to your personal money manager about those questions, or you could talk to Phyllis Schmidt, who is our director of finance and operations. But the easiest and safest and really preferred way for people to give is through EFT, or electronic funds transfer. And that's different than giving through the online banking on your own bank account. It's filling out the form so that we here at the fellowship take that money out of your bank every you're giving us permission to do that every month. The reason we love that is because it's easy. You don't have to do anything on your end. We do it all at once. It's actually a lot safer than writing a check or mailing a check, because there's just less places where it could get intercepted or anything like that. And it just provides us with a really stable income. So some people pay all at once at the beginning or at the end or twice or something like that. That's fine. That's the best way. But monthly income, just like in your own home, is a lot easier for us to know how much money we have to deal with. So that's my answer.
How about this? I'm handy. Can I give of my time? Who do I talk to?
That's a great question. We always need volunteers here at the fellowship. We're an almost entirely volunteer-run organization. People who serve on our committees, sing. Dan is providing music for us today as a volunteer. Cindy is providing worship leadership as a volunteer. Our religious education leaders are volunteers. So we do need volunteers, and it is helpful. We're trying to work to put together a team. We've got people who work in our gardens and our landscaping who are volunteers. We do need some handy folks, but a lot of times what we need is something right away. We need a toilet's overflowing or a alarm is going off. And so in that case, having a volunteer who may or may not be available is not always helpful. So while we would hope that we could use your support if you're a handy person, you could talk to Phyllis about getting on the list to get your name in our roster of volunteers. However, we do also need staff support. And so for every volunteer we've got staff coordinating and supporting those volunteers. And so sometimes people forget and they say, well, I'm volunteering, but we forget that we also need to pay the staff that help coordinate all those volunteers.
Well, you're doing really well so far, Reverend Christina. Let's move on to our next category, budget. But first, a bonus question. How comfortable do you feel talking about money?
Oh, wow, I didn't I didn't know there was going to be a bonus question, Cindy. How do I feel? I mean, I have lots of feelings. I don't know. Can I poll the audience?
Bold move, Christina. So we invite everyone here and those of you at home to log on to the internet on your phones. This is why you took them out earlier. And any other device, and go to menti.com and enter the code. This code, 6613065.
Menti, menti.com. And if you enter that code, this question will come up. How do you feel talking about money? And when you enter your answer, we will see your answers. The code again is 6613065. Help me out here, people. I don't know the answer.
Some of you don't have your phones out yet. Come on, come on.
Well, it looks like we've got a few people who feel great about it, one person who feels miserable about it. Fine looks like it's winning and uncomfortable. So, man, this is a hard question for me personally, but I think honestly, thank you so much, audience, for your help, for your answers. It's also just really good to know how we as a congregation feel. And there's that wide range of answers. I personally don't have a really hard time talking about money. I know that that comes from a place of privilege. First of all, I know that I'm personally not struggling financially, so that helps. That's a privilege that allows me to be able to be more comfortable talking about it. I also don't come from a culture or family of origin that struggled talking about money, and I know that that's not the case for most people. Most of us were raised with money being secretive or something that we don't talk about. So I wish that that were not the case. I wish we could all talk about it. For me personally, I think, money is just a fact of life, like sex. And we as Unitarian Universalists are really good about talking about sex. It's just something we're okay talking about. We've been doing it for decades. We teach it in our Whole Lives program to our children and youth. We understand that there's a diversity of sexuality and that that's normal and healthy and good. And I just wish that we could do the same for money, that we could take away the shame and guilt and yuckiness and secretiveness of money the same way we have for sex. It's normal. It is what it is. There's a diversity. Some people have a lot. Some people don't. Whatever. It doesn't have to be a dirty thing. So that's one of my hopes.
Good points, good points. Moving on, back to our second category of budget. If we have 530 members, is that enough to support our staff and programs?
That's a great question. 530 members plus a number of pledging friends and supporters. We also have, and some of those are individual pledges and some of them are family pledges that pledge as a group. And, if we had a really healthy giving pyramid, so in organizations, a lot of times we think if you stack up the pledges, so small numbers, if a family can give $100 and that's sort of a small pledge, we would stack those up at the bottom, we would expect that the majority of those pledges fall in that category. And then the larger pledges, and then the really large pledges, and there's only a few really, really, really large pledges. It should be shaped kind of like a pyramid or a triangle. And in our case here at the fellowship, it's not. It's pretty lopsided, kind of like this. And so we have a small number of people giving a whole lot, and a lot of people who aren't giving a lot. And some of that is because of people's life circumstances, which absolutely makes sense. And some of it is because maybe people don't know how much, you know, we need. And so if we had a more stable giving pyramid, then we would absolutely be able to fund our budget. Where it is right now, I'm not sure. We've got a big budget, and I'm not sure if we have enough to meet it.
All right. How big is the music budget?
The music budget. Well, our materials are ready today for you to pick up out in the hallway out there. And on this back of the front page is all about the fellowship's budget with a pie chart. Our total worship and music budget is $235,782, which is almost one third of our whole budget. But that includes most of my salary, things like that, Steve's salary. but if we're looking at, not including Steve's salary, if we're looking at supplies, honoraria, and licensing, so if you think about every time we sing a song that's not in our hymnal, or we do a special music that needs music to be purchased, we have to purchase that, or we have to pay the artist for their song, for the use of their song. And now that we're online and archiving our services online, we have to pay copyright, and we have to pay into a copyright collective. So not counting Steve's salary, the music budget is $4,900 for the year, and that's just music honoraria expenses.
Our next category is theology of money. Things are getting trickier here, Christina. All right, we had two people ask the same question in different ways, but I'll ask the longer one. How do we, or can we, garner the same devotion or stewardship that is enjoyed by churches such as Alliance or Christ the Rock? Is it all about salvation?
It's a great question. Yeah, fundamentalist churches do a really good job asking for money and getting it, probably because there's some fear attached and guilt. And unfortunately, I don't have that strategy at my disposal. We believe everybody's going to heaven, so if you believe in heaven. So so I'm not going to scare you or guilt you into giving. That's not helpful. What I would really hope... I'm gonna be a theology geek here, Cindy. It is the theology of money.
That sounds right.
Yeah, it's my job. Universalism historically is this idea that God was so loving that nobody would be damned, nobody would go to hell, and a lot of people thought, well, you know, how are you gonna get people to behave themselves if they're not afraid of damnation? And the early universalist preachers like Hosea Ballou said, we don't behave how we do because we're afraid of hell. We behave how we do because we're in response to a loving God. And so if we believe that about love, and that the world and the universe are made with love, then we should act that way, that we should be equally as generous and loving as God or the universe. That's what I'm hoping for, is that we can, as a community, sort of dig deep and say, what is the world we want to be? How can we be a microcosm of that world? How can we be generous in the way that we see in the natural world? And how can I be a part of something collective that is doing good in the world?
Okay, next question. In some circles, money is seen as evil, the origins being biblical. Can you address evil as it relates to money?
Good question. Again, back to history, Christian religious ancestors, there was a real understanding that things of the spirit were good and things of the world were bad or evil. And money was was of the world, so it was considered evil. Now, if you go back to the Bible, Jesus actually said, give to God what is God's, give to Caesar what is Caesar's. Like, give the money to Caesar, it's his. Give prayer and reverence to God. So, but over time, that Christian theology about good and evil got separated. Our ancestors, however, our Unitarian and Universalist ancestors, didn't believe that. They didn't believe that things of the world were evil. They believed we were of the world, that our congregations were of the world, that we were not trying to save people's souls for an afterlife, that we were trying to do it here and now on this earth. And we had a very, very human-centered theology. And so we believe that humans are ultimately good, ultimately originally blessed. We make mistakes, we cause harm, but that doesn't mean we're evil. And we reject original sin as a concept. And so instead, we can see money as just part of the world. Messed up like the world is messed up, also potentially useful like the world is potentially useful. So it just sort of is what it is sort of, it's just natural and just part of the, it's not natural, it's a totally made up construct, but it just is what it is and it's part of our world, and we can use it in whatever ways we need to use it.
Final question on this category. Nonprofits need to continually ask for money. Why is this so hard? How can it be made noble?
That's a great question. I think, again, back to the idea of it just being a reality, and that we've been socialized in our world to think of money as dirty or bad or shameful. And if we can reject the guilt and shame and instead come at it from a place of abundance and hope and human agency, then we're halfway there. And I think, you know, anybody who's ever done fundraising for a living or as a volunteer knows that asking people to give their money is asking them what their highest values are and saying, what is it that you value and how can we help you put your resources where you think that you have value, you know, your values. So we're not begging. This is not, you know, we're not standing out, you know, shaking a tin to try to get people to drop a few coins in. We're trying to get people to align their budget with their values. And so I think that's a really noble goal. You know, I've used this example before in services where if I say that I really deeply value eating healthy, but then you look at my budget and you see that one out of every two meals I ate at fast food. There's no shame in eating fast food. I do like fast food, but it's probably not in alignment with my stated value of eating healthy. My budget will show you the truth, right? And so thinking about, you know, where do your resources go, it is a good way to figure out what you value.
Excellent. Well, finally, our last category, the stakes are getting high here, Reverend Christina. How are you doing?
I'm feeling all right. Let's just do this.
All right. Our last category is personal relationship to money.
Those sounds are feeling, make me feel very nervous.
First question, what's a tangible way to view how our pledge is used?
A tangible way to view how our pledge is used. I mean, this is a great question because it's one of those things, especially generationally, younger generations and newer ways of understanding giving tend to be more tangible. We tend to give toward crowdfunding. You know, we're going to give to this one thing or this one thing that needs support. I always think about the World Wildlife Federation, and they have those like adopt a sloth, you know. And you give a certain amount of money and you get a little card about the sloth that you adopted. Spoiler alert, you did not adopt that sloth. That sloth is still out in the wild. I know, it's devastating. But that makes it feel tangible, right? That you feel like this amount of money is for this thing, right? So I've tried to break up our budget. You know, we've done a lot of work trying to show. It's one thing to say we spend this amount of money on our building. We spend this amount of money on staff. But what does that even mean? What are our staff do. So we've asked the staff to say where their time goes, and that is ultimately where your money goes. And so that this pie chart will help you with that too. One tangible example, one of the first questions is, what amount of our total budget is to keep the parking lot clear, grass mowed, building heated and cooled and lighted, cleaned, insured, and to pay our mortgage? So just the basic building stuff. If you like coming in this building and you like it not being freezing cold and having lights and not being snow everywhere, that's what this question is about. It's $2,283 per week. Per week. Because we got to pay our mortgage and we got to pay all those things. And as you know, if you are paying energy bills right now at your home, you know that those are going way up. So that's one tangible example. And there's lots more in your materials, so I hope you'll read them.
Another question. Why is 10% the tithing amount?
Oh, that's a great question. Tithe is a sort of a biblical or, you know, religious term that literally just means tenth. That's what a tithe is. So when people use the word tithe, they often just mean giving religiously or giving financially to your religious organization. But strictly speaking, it's a tenth. We don't ask for a tithe here at the fellowship. Maybe that's why Alliance does a better job than we do. But there used to be a kind of a UU thing where they called it the UU tithe, and it was 5% of your income to the congregation and 5% to other organizations in the community. And we recognize that a percentage is, you know, when you have very little money, 10% is a big chunk of your money. When you have a whole ton of money, 10% is, I mean, I know how percentages work and they're the same across the board, but it feels less when you have a lot to give. So I want people to know that they, whatever you give is deeply valued, and some people can't give at all. And that's also understandable. And we want to know if that's the case in your life so we can be here to help. That's one thing that we can do. Filling out your pledge form and checking the box saying, I cannot give at all, is pledging. It counts as a pledge. So please just check that box and let us know. And we would love to see if there's any way we can support you. However, for those of us that can give, there's lots. We have a guide in here. You know, when I first joined a UU congregation, I'd never really been a member of any other kind of congregation, and I didn't know. I give $10 a month to NPR. Is that sufficient? You know, I just didn't know. So we have this color guide in our pledge materials. It says, it's your move. We're going with a game, fun game theme this year. But it gives lots of different categories, and it describes different people's life circumstances, and you can find your life circumstance in there and then see a range of possible pledges that you could make. And you might look at that and go, holy moly, I can't pledge that much, and that's fine. Some people choose to try to work their way up to that over time. That's what my family did, to try to get into our color category that we felt fit our lives the best.
Final question of this category. Why is money and the ability to use it well tied to our self-esteem?
The short answer to that is extractive capitalism. So I, you know, capitalism in and of itself is not an inherent evil, but the way it has been used in our society to extract from the earth and extract from people, you know, whatever we can get out of people is the most we can get is the goal of capitalism. And so what that does is create an entire society who has associated worth, self-worth, with financial worth. You know, if you even think about the word worth, you know, if you ask the question, you know, I asked my husband the other day, I wonder how much Lin-Manuel Miranda is worth. And what I meant was, how much money does he have? But that word worth is so inextricably tied to money that we feel like our self-worth is part of it. And this goes back to bootstrap theory. You know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And if you're a hard worker, then you can get out of this, you know, problem. Even if you never got boots, you know, that's not fair. So there's a lot of shame built into this societal structure. And there's also no supports built into our society, you know, really very minimal supports where we're going to help each other out. Really, everyone's sort of on their own. And you know, there's all these wonderful stories out there of, you know, some feel-good story about a high school robotics team that built an electronic wheelchair for a little boy whose family couldn't afford for him to have a wheelchair. And everybody goes, oh, isn't that sweet of that high school robotics team? And I think, what the heck? Why are we relying on a high school robotics team to fund for this child what the society should be funding, right? So we've individualized what should be societal or collective. So it makes us feel like we did something wrong if we don't have enough or something like that. We also feel bad if we have too much, right? That's also something people feel shame about. So what I would love as a faith for us to be able to do is say, we're going to reject that. We're going to have a stance of abundance. We're going to say there's enough to go around if we're willing to share. That doesn't have anything to do with our self-worth. No one on earth, if you have any sense of goodness and decency, would say that a kindergarten teacher's worth is less than an investment banker's worth. You know, I mean, hopefully they have the same worth, right? But just because one makes more money than the other, that we shouldn't feel shame about that. So I'm hoping that by talking about it out loud, clearly, that we can start decoupling that shame and decoupling that sense of self-worth and just say, this is what it is. And until we're going to have a wildly different economic structure in our world, this is what we got to do. So we got to share with each other and be generous.
Well, I think you did it, Reverend Christina. You answered all of the questions. Unfortunately, we're not going to give you $1 million. Unless someone suddenly really increases their fellowship pledge.
I'll give it to the fellowship if you do give $1 million.
Yeah, see, there you go. But you are a winner in Who Wants to Stump the Minister?
Thank you, everyone.